This is the Preach Jacobs Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Preach Jacobs of the Preach Jacobs Podcast. We are sponsored by Big Media and also Coker Center for the Arts with Soul House inside of Coker Center for the Arts. Make sure you come to our next Soul House session show, October the 22nd. Get your tickets to CokerCenterForTheArts.com or go to all my social media joints. We have a ColaCon anniversary show October the 22nd. We're going to have a panel discussion with hip-hop artists Jay Live, Dre Lopez, Stephen Prowse, and Ebony Toussaint for the Aurora podcast. We also are going to have an art show, a sneak peek with artwork from Sanford Green, as well as Dan Lish, an amazing artist out of London. Get your tickets now. $10. We're going to sell it out. Really, really excited about this next guest that we have on this podcast. Been making it a point to reach out to everybody that's running for some type of political office for the November 4th election. Whoever you vote for, make sure you vote. A lot of these local elections don't have anybody showing up. So please get your ass up and go vote. The person that I have, his name is Jared Johnson. He's a local activist, photographer, and co-owner of All Good Books and Five Points. He's also currently a candidate for city council at large seat in Columbia, South Carolina. Jared, what's going on, man?
Not much is going on other than trying to win the at large seat.
Well, that's a lot going on. You said it's not much. It's a lot.
You know, as far as like the focus, it's taking up so much of my time, and gladly, but yeah, there is, you're right. There's a lot going on, but you know, nothing that, you know how it is, you know, being, you know, Black, being a creative and being someone who's passionate and involved in politics and what's happening in your city. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on, but when you get used to a lot happening, it'd be like, oh, not much. Just like, you know, par for the course.
Well, I'm glad you're here and I'm glad you're running. And one of the things that I use this as kind of an entry point for me. I saw something that when we were looking at the, like, 2020, when you had all these things that were happening, you had COVID that was shutting things down. You had the murder of George Floyd. And what you started to see was the Black Lives Matter movement kind of exploding in a way where you had a lot of people protesting, getting involved. And one of the things that I noticed was that there were a lot of people that got involved with the political conversation, running for public offices in their cities. And there was a lot of people, Black and brown, that were like, hey, I regularly probably wouldn't have gotten involved in politics, but it was just something where the moment kind of guided people in those directions. So one of the things that I always think is interesting when I'm speaking to young Black folks that are getting involved in the political sphere is, what motivated you to run for this? And also, what made you run for an at-large seat as opposed to running for like a smaller district seat?
Oh, great question. I'll go in order. What prompted me to run, or what motivated me to run, is a few things. The first thing that motivated me or really pushed me to run is when the city repealed the anti-conversion therapy ban that we had.
For the people that don't understand, like, break it down, because I think what happens a lot of times politically is that mm-hmm. people will use like names of bills or names of things mm-hmm. without like really, really identifying it. So tell us what this specifically is, and what does that mean about the repeal of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what month are we in now? We're in October.
Mm-hmm.
Before, like, a few months ago, and y'all give me grace on the timeline, but for a while, the city had an ordinance and a law in place in Columbia where conversion therapy was banned. It could not happen. And for those who do not know, conversion therapy is a type of therapy, quote unquote, that is used on people who are within the LGBTQ, and this therapy is used as a method or a way to correct what others think is wrong with them. Like, oh, you should not be gay, you should not be queer, you should mm-hmm. not be lesbian. And historically, you know, those methods that were used during conversion therapy are akin to torture, very much like torture, mm-hmm. whether it's like, you know, connecting to IV that induces nausea while they're playing, you know, porn or showing images of two men kissing or whatever that person may be. That way they're having a physical reaction. That's just one example. And you can Google it, not to get too deep on that. But the city had, at one point, we took a stand. We banned that type of behavior, that type of therapy. Mm-hmm. Recently, this summer, the State House, our attorney general, along with one of the senators from upstate, created a budget proviso, or as I like to call it, a budget amendment, that put a lot of the funding that was to come from the state to the city, it put that money at risk if we didn't get rid of our conversion therapy ban. Mm-hmm. And we were in a situation where we had so many people within the legal field here in Columbia, law firms and activists and nonprofits saying, oh, this would be a fight. It'd be a big fight, but we can win because what they're doing is unconstitutional and it won't hold up in court. Our city council, some voted to keep the ban, mm-hmm. some voted to get rid of it. And the ones who want to get rid of it, those votes outnumber the ones who wanted to keep the ban. And so now the city does not have a conversion therapy ban. And during that process, the ACLU contacted me and asked me to speak out and to be an advocate, because I've been doing this for like many years now within Columbia, whether it's like issues that involve race or focus on race, or in this case, the LGBTQ, or anything dealing with the marginalized. So I spoke out as an individual, but they also asked me to speak out as a small business owner. And so there was so much support for people to keep, mm-hmm. for the city to keep that ban in place. And when I think about what we did, whether it was, you know, with the ACLU on the steps of City Hall with the press or the public hearings that City Council had, mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. was clear that most people in the city wanted us to keep that ban on conversion therapy. They don't want that kind of thing in Columbia, but a lot of people who aren't used to fighting did not want to fight. And so we no longer have that ban. And so that was one of the tipping points. The second thing that kind of made me want to run, and not kind of, that made me want to run, we have an incumbent who's currently at large, and I'm not talking to Tyler Bailey, so clearly it's clear who I'm talking about. It is very much about optics. It is very much about social media. It is very much about how can I use this platform, this position to help myself, to make myself better. And a lot of people know this, but then they need reminding. There's so much that happens in front of the camera, or, you know, in front house on stage, but there's so much more that happens behind the scenes, and I've been privy to that. You can call that lucky or unlucky, but we need leaders who aren't there to build themselves and make it only about them. We need people who actually care. So a combination of, you know, not wanting an incumbent or someone in that seat who's self-centered, or the city getting rid of the conversion therapy ban, it was just enough was enough. And also, when you look at counts, another thing that motivated me to run, there's no one of the working class on city council. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have law degrees. A lot of them have money from family. A lot of them have money from past businesses they have or current businesses they have. There's no one on council that's making less than like $40,000. Mm-hmm. And as we move into the future and as we move through every day, you know, affordability is a real issue for so many people, myself included.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Whether it's real, whether it's rent, whether it's, you know, healthcare costs, whether it's food. I mean, the food prices are like wild. But all this has an impact on everyone's bottom line. And we need an individual like myself on council who understands that affordability is a real issue and who can speak to the concerns of the working class versus just data.
I wanted to ask you about this because mm-hmm. I think that, you know, the idea of, you know, someone that's running for local public office, there should be this platform to be like, hey, I'm in this community. I'm a part of the community. I want to be able to run. So aside from, you know, the difficulty at times, depending on the seats that you're running for, that sometimes you have to raise a lot of money to be able to do those type of things. But raising a lot of money is totally different than raising no money at all. And mm-hmm. and I think that you have this approach to your campaign that I'm interested in hearing your perspective on it, where you've publicly said that you're not fundraising at all. And I think that, you know, it's one of those necessary evils that it feels like politics, it's like you have to raise something for people to be aware of what you're doing. So yes. Whether the money goes mm-hmm. to mailers, whether the money goes to, you know, helping get the word out for people to be aware of you by November the 4th. Tell us about this approach of this anti-fundraising approach. And do you feel like it's been effective for what you're trying to do?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, again, in two parts, I'll take it in order. the approach, and I'm very much aware I'm at a disadvantage. I'm not fundraising, but just to be frank and to be honest, that's the only way I know how to be, and that is me, an honest person. I feel there's too much money in politics.
So here's my thing. If somebody comes to you right now and be like, yo, I want to write a check to the campaign, you'd be like, nah, son.
I would tell them no. I would say, I can't receive that because I'm not fundraising. I don't want to receive that. But then if there is someone who's willing to write a check or to donate to the campaign, mm-hmm. that means they want to support you. Okay. And so then I would let them know, here are the ways you can be helpful. You can support the campaign. You can support my mission of giving the working class a voice mm-hmm. and a say on council. You can do that, but it doesn't mean you have to give me money. You can throw an event if you want for me. You can let your friends know. I'll give you materials that I created that you can share with people. But there are ways of maneuvering within the political realm and winning office that doesn't have to include, you know, fundraising. Mm-hmm. Now, with that said, I am bucking the norm and I put myself at a big disadvantage and win or lose, and I'm hoping to win. You know, I understand it's a major thing, but values matter. And it's a principle thing for me. I can, on one hand, personally feel that there's too much money in politics and, you know, it's all about who's raising the most funds and mm-hmm. then myself participate in that system. And then the second part is I do activism and community work and a host of things every day. Mm-hmm. So for me, running and having a campaign where you're trying to win the at-large seat for Columbia City Council, that does take time. It takes effort. Mm-hmm. But I'm still doing the work that I've done for the past 7 years when it comes to community and advocating and trying to make the city better for all of us, and including the marginalized. If I add in fundraising, then that takes away from the work I'm doing. Then that takes away from the actual campaign, and where I'm, instead of telling people about my ideas and my vision and the ways we can build Columbia and make it more equitable and make it more affordable and, you know, make it better for a lot of people, I have to then parse that down, or a fraction of time has to go away because now I'm fundraising. So for me, it's not about money. It never is about money. It's about people. And if you think about what people use the money they get from fundraising for. Mm-hmm. And like, this is more of a conversation because I don't want to feel like I'm like on like a rant. Mm-hmm. But like, people use some of that money, not all of it, but a lot of that money is used to create a profile or a persona or image of this person. They've been about the people. They're out here. They're having events at this restaurant. You can come get a free beverage and a free bite and hear about, mm-hmm. you know, it. Well, I don't have to do that because, no. you know, whether it's organizing Cities First Black Lives Matter mural or the book Blackout or organizing the city's first affordable housing panel that we have partnered with the ACLU on. We have the NIC like a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly, and this is not bragging because a lot of times it's to my own detriment, but I do because it's necessary. The work is necessary. I'm constantly doing things that others aren't, and others, even elected individuals aren't doing. And that's not a brag, but I don't have to have funds coming in to create an image to then project on people. A lot of people know, not everyone, because that's part of the work too of my campaign. I have to make sure people know what I've done and what I want to do. But I am blessed, and I'm approaching it from the standpoint of, I've been about this. I'm not new to this. I'm true to this. So I don't need money coming in to create an image. As long as I make sure I'm doing the work of knocking on doors, going to forums, and let people know what the campaign's about and my vision, I want that to be enough. And I'm banking on that being enough without having to fundraise.
I do think that there is an opportunity of looking at this approach and figuring out a way to repurpose and package it. Like, I also feel like there's always this thing where it's just like, you know, I can understand there. Well, and this goes back to what we were saying before, is that mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that run for public office locally that money is not an issue for them, mm-hmm. you know, but money is an important component. But what I also think is really important, and I think I'll give this question to you as well, is mm-hmm. that there becomes this thing that I think you have something that you can tweak in the sense of giving young people in a community a platform or a blueprint to be socially and politically involved that costs little to no money. Because I think that what happens is politically there's a sticker shock thing. And we spoke off mic about the numbers of you know, some of these local elections, the amount of money people have to raise.
It's wild.
Yeah, it's a lot. And sometimes if people are looking at those past numbers that have to be raised for these local offices, it becomes discouraging. But you don't want people that will otherwise be involved politically to be discouraged. So I would say there's probably something there that can be kind of a guide. We can say, hey, younger people, y'all want to be involved, not necessarily in politics, but community, because community mm-hmm. technically is politics, and politics is the theater of trying to help the community. But it's like, mm-hmm. there's a way of kind of having a conversation to say, here's things that we can do that if you want to be involved and you don't have money, or you don't have to worry about raising money, whatever, that's an approach. But I also feel like, man, running for a seat, especially an at-large seat, money can be very, very helpful. But if you take money off the table, if you're not fundraising, what are the other challenges that arise if money is not going to be an issue for you right now? What are the challenges mm-hmm. that you've come into while running this campaign?
I haven't really run into challenges as far as I'm aware. I mean, I'm sure some other people are like, well, oh, like I haven't seen like any sponsored ads on Meta. But I think, and I'll respond this way because I think it's getting at the heart of what you're saying. No, I'm not fundraising. And yes, I'm aware it puts me at a disadvantage, but oh, there are things I'm doing in lieu of fundraising. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, this is novel. This is different. So I'm hoping I am creating a blueprint for young people who don't have money or who feel like there's too much money in politics and they want to hold to that value, that principle. Mm-hmm. I don't want to contribute to that system. I'm not fundraising. But those who say they want to support or they would give money, I ask them to share reshare this on Instagram, put this on Facebook, talk to your friends, host an event, because word of mouth is still the number one marketing. And this the kind of marketing you can't buy. You know, for example, you can have candidates who will use some of their funds for the campaign, rightfully so, mm-hmm. to get sponsored ads or to have their posts boosted on Instagram. While that is helpful and it helps widen their audience or get that particular message out, mm-hmm. that still pales in comparison when you have, for example, 40 people mm-hmm. resharing one thing mm-hmm. and then the effect that has on the algorithm. And then you can get into the marketing. We can get deep into the marketing like in another conversation. So instead of like, you know, fundraising, which I'm not doing, I am supplementing that by relying on people power. And it's a thing of like, well, which one do you value more and which one is more effective? And there are some days where there is a question mark about that, because I wish I could just be like, well, oh, if I had like endless amounts of money, I could just flood the zone with all the things I want to say, mm-hmm. what I want to see, but I'm not doing that. I wouldn't want to do that. And so I'm also, the way I'm asking people to put their trust in me and my ideas and my platform, I'm putting my faith and trust in them and say, hey, like, help me. Don't cut me a check. Don't give me money. Just share. If you like what you hear, if you like what you hear and you like the ideas and if you believe in me, then share. And so far it has been successful as far as keeping me, you know, as a competitive individual mm-hmm. running for that at-large seat. And also, other than fundraising, you know, make sure that you're going to be tired. I'm a little tired right now, but like, you go to every forum, mm-hmm. everything you're invited to, you go, because then you know you're not fundraising. There are some things that other candidates may not go to because they don't have to, or it doesn't align with their strategy, or they mm-hmm. already got maybe that one demographic locked in. Well, I know I don't have that luxury because I'm not fundraising. So there are ways to win, in my opinion, and whether I win or lose, like, there are ways to win where we can get away from making campaigns about money. Because see, when you're fundraising, like I said at the top, you're trying to get money in and you're trying to like build that coffer, but then that's less time for doing the actual work mm-hmm. and that's less time for letting people know about your ideas. And then unlike some of the people I'm running against, this is real for me. Like, I do this work every day, and counsel or no counsel, mm-hmm. this work will continue. But I also understand that if I'm blessed enough to win the at-large seat, that platform will do so much for the vision, the ideas, and those who I've helped and want to help.
Yeah.
So there was a supplementing the fundraising.
It's always funny because it's like there are things that kind of like this overlapping or this Venn diagram of things where it's just like, hey, politically, I want to create a campaign where fundraising isn't the main focus, which I think there's something there. I think it's difficult and it's an uphill battle, but I do think there's something there to be able to tell the community that there's ways to get out there and to inform the community without mm-hmm. money being at the forefront. But on the other end of that, you're a business owner, right? You're a cool business owner, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a part of that where All Good Books and 5 Points, this is totally an endorsement of All Good Books. I tell people all the time that anytime that you want to buy some stuff, there's a chain option and there's a local option. Mm-hmm. Always trying to lean into local options when you can and if you can. But I go back to saying, you know, to running a business, you know, money is an issue, right? And to small business owners, and me being one of them, mm-hmm. having an art gallery in the Vista, now that we're in the Coca Center now, I understand the idea of like, oh, this is what rent costs. Oh boy, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is what the insurance is, or hey, this is this and that. Mm-hmm. What are some of your focuses, if any, by being a business owner that you can apply to this council seat if you get it? Like what are some of the things that I would say, whatever you learn from the city officials, good or bad, that will help you kind of alter an approach when it comes to small businesses in Columbia?
I love that question. Well, and I'll say this, and a lot of people know this, a lot of people don't. But the way I approach All Good Books, a business where I am a co-owner and have been given like so much leeway and freedom from the partners and other founders, first and foremost, I did not make a capital investment to become an owner. Mm. And so my approach to that work and the lessons I've gotten from that experience.
So how did that work? Did they know you and say, we want you to be a part of this? How did that work?
I love that question too. So not basically, after the Black Lives Matter mural, mm-hmm. I did a project called the Book Blackout, where I mm-hmm. solicited book donations by Black authors, predominantly Black female authors, because I want the blackout. All the little free libraries in 29205. Mm-hmm. Clint Wallace, one of the founders of All Good Books, an incredible man. He's also a professor at the law school. He donates to that project. And with the way I was raised, you know, when people do things for you, whether you know them or not, say thank you. And so I was thanking every single person who donated books during that book blackout campaign. I sent him a thank you. He responded. He was like, I like what you're doing. I've also noticed these other things you've done. Let's have a lunch. We had a lunch. He said, here's what I want to do. If you're interested, just let me know in another meeting, like what you would want to do within this space. We had another meeting, launched, like, you know, gave him an idea of something I wanted to do. He was on board. He wouldn't have my involvement. And then from there, I was offered ownership and say, work with us. Don't just work for us because of the work I've done and the value that they knew I would bring. So when I think about me as a co-owner, yeah, that thing as far as like, well, oh, like, you know, you need a diverse group of people informing your decisions and helping you lead and make change and run that business. But for me, a way has been made. Now, granted, I'm not independently wealthy. I have struggled with affordability issues. Mm-hmm. And
we'll like, talk about, you know, we'll talk about
it's real. But that aside, because a lot of people deal with that, that's every day. Mm-hmm. I'm able to view things differently because a way was made for me without having to involve money. And some people can call it delusional, but my track record, I've done so much and have accomplished so much within the city and for the city without money being a factor. Mm-hmm. So I would want to bring that approach to council and will bring that approach to council and say, what can we do for people not worried about money? Not saying that, oh, it won't be a concern as a councilman to say, well, oh, how will you pay for things? But when you are being given the path or when you're on a path of I've accomplished so much and have been successful without being rich or having to make money a priority, then automatically I'm going to move forward without having to worry about like, oh, fundraising, for example, or I can't do this because I don't have the money because I've done so much without money. And you ask, you know, what have I learned from city council thus far that I would bring if I'm, you know, I've learned what they have taught me is to continue being about people and continue to be embedded in the community, whether you have a title or a position, because a lot of people on council, you don't see them. Mm-hmm. You never see them until it's time for reelection or they want something. That was made evident when we had a forum in 29203. The Wiley Kennedy Foundation, along with the United Alliance of North Columbia Neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people, including the pastor, was even talking about how, you know, some of the incumbents that were on that stage, we don't see y'all. Like, where have y'all been? And how they were now moving forward, going to hold people accountable. So they have taught me that you can't let a process or a campaign or running for office or even winning that seat change who you are at your core. They have taught me that hold true to your beliefs, hold true to your values, and be about the people and be among the people.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
We were having conversations, and one of the things you're talking about is your personal experiences being part owner, which opens up to, hey, I'm a business owner. Here's a conversation with small businesses. One of the things that has been a heavy topic on your social medias and things you talk about a lot is Columbia's unhoused community, or Columbia's, I would say, housing unstable or insecure mm-hmm. community. But what is your approach to kind of answering some of those questions and some of those challenges to the unhoused community or people having issues with affordable housing? And how has your personal experience that you've talked about publicly impact that focus, and how will you apply it to, I guess, if you're on council, how will you apply that to policy?
Yeah, I mean, well, I've been talking about this in the campaign trail and like during this whole run for Columbia City Council, that large seat. We need a housing endowment. And whether it's from my personal experience and or talking with other artists who are dealing with housing insecurity or the rising cost of housing and those who are homeless, because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm very much, you know, a pedestrian. I'm always walking. But when you walk, when you see certain faces and you just reach out, you know, you form those relationships, you have those conversations, and predominantly it is a money thing. And so the approach I want to take, excuse me, from the combination of personal and the stories that I'm hearing from others who are facing the same issues or who are homeless, is let's get at the root of it, the money of it. I would love the city to have a housing endowment. Along with that endowment now, I would love for the city to create vertical housing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been saying this, and I feel like a broken record. No, we're not going to start out with a 50-story building. No, this is not New York. And of course, there's money involved, so it would start small. But I would want vertical housing, a multi-story building that was income-based. So many times you'll have people and candidates and say, oh, if you wait on private or partner with private, we've been saying that for what, the past 30-something years? And the housing epidemic and housing insecurity has just gotten worse and worse. So I want the city to own the issue. And even if we start small, I want there to be income-based housing that's aesthetically pleasing, that's safe, and that's something anyone can have access to. So if you're a doctor and you're making six figures, your rent will be XYZ because of the amount of money you make. If you're a teacher and you're making $40,000, okay, your rent will be lower, but it'll be based upon your income. Now, the differences in those rent, we know there'll be a difference because one's making one level, one's making a lower level, but the difference will be made up with that endowment. And when you think about endowments, for those who don't know, think about the Harvard Endowment or the endowments that come in a lot of Ivy Leagues or major research universities. We need that, but dedicated to housing. That way, the money that is made from the endowment, because it's working within our market, since we are a capitalistic society and capitalism is king here, that money will make up the differences in the rent, and also it will cover the maintenance in that building. And while you're expanding that building that's income-based and affordable, that endowment, once it reaches a certain level, will be able to provide emergency housing relief to those who may not live in that building or within that complex, but they still can benefit from that endowment. So if you had a death in the family, if you're laid off, or you're having a major health issue where you can't work, why should you face eviction? Why should you be kicked out on the street? Or why should your house be, you know, foreclosed on because of circumstances outside of your control? That endowment then could be a lifeline for those who aren't physically within this building or this structure that I'm describing, but it's able to help everyone in Columbia. And so my approach, because of my experience and those I know around me and those whose stories I've been lucky enough to hear, we got to get to the root of the matter, and it needs to be about getting to the money of just paying for housing. And a lot of people will try to conflate or combine the issue of substance abuse or mental illness with homelessness, and that is a part of that, and that is a part of the housing insecurity, but it's a small part, because when you actually look at the information, look at the data, and listen to the stories, you then have issues with your mental health. You then are more open yourself up to substance abuse when you don't have housing, or even if you have housing, if you're stressed about how you can keep up with that rent, mm-hmm. or if it's a struggle, because when those stressors come, it then opens you up to other things that it just makes you more vulnerable. So I don't want people to like get, you know, to confuse those issues of mental health and substance abuse with the overall issue within housing, which is affordability. So I would get to the root of it by tackling the money and creating a municipal housing endowment.
Where would this money come from the endowment? And have you seen other communities that use this platform for the work? Yeah, give me, because I'm trying to see how this would work. Like, where would this happen? Where would the money go?
Oh, God. No, listen, I should have been prepared. Like, I can't rattle off a whole list, but there, and I've been in conversation with Julie Jones Tuttle. You know Julie Jones Tuttle. Mm-hmm. Like, there are areas within Florida, all across the country, that have models very much like what I'm describing or exactly like what I'm describing. So this isn't something novel or new. It'll be novel and new for Columbia, but this model has been tried and like tested, and it does work. To the question of where the money will come from, two-part, I'm not a person who will shy away from saying like, oh no, I would absolutely want to raise taxes in a way where people didn't feel it and in the areas where we can actually raise them. Because my first thought was like, well, oh, we need to do like a 25-cent tax or some sort of regressive tax on all alcohol sales. Well, we can't do that as a city because alcohol sales and the taxes on those alcohol sales are controlled by the state. And then there'll be a much bigger hurdle to ask them to raise taxes. And we got Republicans in charge. They're not trying to do that. But I would want to work with council and figure out the ways where we could have those subtle increases, whether it's a percent here, a percent there. And I also would love this, the city, to mimic what we do on a county level, how there's a county penny tax. Well, I would love for the city to have its own version of the penny tax. Now, a city's smaller than a county, correct? So we might need bring in more than a penny from people. But I would want to increase taxes in the areas I could to make sure that there was money from those taxes going into the endowment along with fundraising. And I bring in fundraising for the endowment because when I organized the BLM mural, I raised over $3,000 as an individual within less than a week. Can you imagine if the city versus it using its marketing and its platforms to market all the cool things we're doing and self-grandizing? Imagine they put an effort into like, hey, we're fundraising for this endowment where you're getting individuals from the city, you're partnering with different corporations that have the same vision and values and missions that you have as far as making sure everyone has housing and access to affordable housing. A city can easily raise six-digit figures if it uses and leverages its power as a municipality as far as marketing and reaching out to other sister cities. And so it'll be a combination of increase in taxes and also fundraising and, you know, personal and private donations. And the reason why I have no problem saying that and saying what a lot of people won't say as far as like, oh, I would love to raise taxes in certain areas in small, subtle ways where people don't feel it, where it's not a burden. But you do need to raise it because it is a real issue. Whether you talk to business owners downtown or in Five Points, all across the city, or individuals, this isn't. The issue of housing insecurity and homelessness and housing affordability has become such a thing where everyone wants it to be solved. And at a certain point, we have to face the reality of it. I'm going to be honest. We have to put more money towards solving this. And so the endowment will be funded partly by an increase in taxes and revenue come from that and the personal and private donations.
We're going to call it the Jared tax.
Well, I mean, not to be funny, because it's very serious. I mean, you call it the Jared tax, call it whatever you want. And I hopefully don't put just my name to it. I wouldn't mind spearheading it and advocating for that. But it is a real issue. And we have to wake up and we have to be real about if businesses, especially those on Main Street downtown, are this fed up with the situation, and if people are sick of seeing it and then going beyond the visual and the optics, those who actually care want it solved, then at a certain point, we have to be honest and say, oh, no, this will take more funding. This will take money because the money's not going to come from nowhere. Mm-hmm. You would have to go up on taxes if this is a real priority. And I think based on, you know, based on the questions we've been getting as candidates at the forums, based on the articles written about affordability in the past few years, this is a real issue for Columbia, and a lot of people want it solved. So we, as leaders, have to be honest and not just tell people what they want to hear or what we think they want to hear. We would have to raise taxes. That doesn't mean like, oh, you're going to see a 50%. No, you find different ways you can increase a little here, a little there, where people don't feel it. But we have to dedicate a portion of funds to go towards housing and go towards making sure there's affordable housing in that endowment.
I think that you are the most unique candidate I've ever spoke to, because no matter if people believe taxes should be raised or not, they usually never say it, but I commend you for that. We started the conversation about the motivation to get you to run, and it was something that was infringing on LGBTQ culture and mm-hmm. rights. What are other things that, if you are a council member, mm-hmm. that would be things that you would push forward to help that community, mm-hmm. things that you see that needs more work or things that you think need to be implemented? What are things that Columbia is doing well with LGBTQ community, and what things that you think they need a little bit of work on?
Oh, there's a lot of questions there. A few, not just one. I'll start with the one that is most recent. The city's doing an okay job as far as like making sure Pride is getting funded, and that you know, you at least know that there is some LGBTQ presence. So, I mean, you know, I don't mind giving credit where it's due, because I'm not always mm-hmm. like trying to beat up on people, because, like, you know, even though I'm running for office, I do a lot of work, you know, with the elected leaders and our officials, including the mayor. You know, the mayor's been so kind to me. Like, when I text him about different art projects I'm doing, you know, he will actually get done within like minutes. He doesn't wait a day. He'll mm-hmm. post things. And I'm not trying to be like, oh, put all his business out there, but you can say what you want about him. And he and I know even about the conversion therapy. Like, when mm-hmm. it's time to do battle, he and I will be on different side of things and we'll do battle. But
what was his approach to it? Because he was for banning it, right? Or he was for getting rid of
the ban. He voted to get rid of it. Yeah. And I mm-hmm. think that might be a conversation that you might can have with him on the podcast. And I'm not trying to sidestep the question, mm-hmm. but I'm very much that person. I know my motivations, and I can hypothesize or have ideas as to why people voted.
I know his response was, but I was just interested in hearing what you thought about his response to it.
I mean, it's disappointing. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's not even something that's breaking for the podcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's footage, and I put it on my social media, and it was out there when I spoke against them getting rid of the ban with the ACLU. Mm-hmm. That's on Post and Curry on the City Hall steps, you know, and people saw it directly, those who came out to the hearings. He and I went back and forth at one point because I gave my testimony. But then as things developed, there a point within that meeting or that public hearing, there seemed to be an attempt to characterize or reframe the discussion around, well, if children are getting abused, we got to get people to report it, even though we know abuse is always underreported. Mm-hmm. And so I said something, and then I was told that, you know, hey, like, I'm not going to be just answering random things out from the crowd. If you got something, say, get on the mic. So I got back on the mic and challenged the reframing that was coming from him and some of the members on council. And so, you know, of course, like, I'm disappointed that the ban is now gone and he voted the way he voted. But, I mean, I'll give credit. Like, you know, we were able to have a Pride mm-hmm. on Main Street, mm-hmm. you know. And while, for me, that is, like, bare bones minimum, there's some areas and some places, big or small, where that isn't possible. So I am grateful for that. And they are, you know, not every council member, but a lot of them are open to hearing from the community in regards to the different issues that LGBTQ faces. Now, the impact of that feedback they're getting from the community, are they always voting the way we want them to vote? No, that was evident with the conversion therapy ban and how we got rid of that, the city got rid of that. But, you know, I'll give credit when it's due. You know, what were some of the other questions? Because there was a few questions within that question other than, like, well, what are they getting right?
Well, just, yeah, well, I guess we're talking about what we're getting right, and you're saying that, you know, Pride is a very, very visual, successful event here mm-hmm. that I wouldn't have seen something like that happening years ago here, the way that it's embraced.
Well, originally in Columbia, if I'm got my history correct, please y'all fact check me, but if I'm not mistaken, Pride originally started as a march here. Mm. It wasn't a whole week long celebration or a parade or the festivals and the things that, as we know it now, it was just a march. Mm. You know, it was just a march, and it has been able to grow. So, you know, give them credit for that. But me giving credit in some regards and working with whether it's Daniel or anyone on council in certain areas doesn't exempt or excuse the other areas that we all can improve, myself included.
Yeah. Final question. If and I guess this kind of ties in. Mm-hmm. You're at large council member today. Mm-hmm. Like, you won. What would be three things you want to implement that you can streamline right away that you think would be ideas to kind of push Columbia forward?
Absolutely. Well, one, I talked on it earlier, I want to implement the housing endowment and make sure the city is owning the issue of housing insecurity and homelessness and creating affordable housing, income-based housing. The second thing, along with housing, a lot of people are dealing with food insecurity because of the rise in food costs, whether it's seniors and those who work every day, but the bills are too high, they don't have enough for food. So I want the city to create a city kitchen where we work with the incredible food talent that mm-hmm. we have in the city, the James Beard award-winning food talent we have in the city, mm-hmm. to craft delicious and tasty menus so people can come to this kitchen and get a free breakfast and free lunch. Whether you make $0 or $1 billion, I want the city to have a municipal kitchen that offers free breakfast and free lunch and have mm-hmm. an on-site pantry. That way we're alleviating some of the stress that a lot of the local food banks are receiving. And the third thing, I would want to make sure that the city implemented and created a policy, and I'm calling it like a percent for public art policy, but mm-hmm. 1% of all public construction projects, 1% of those budgets, so the amount that it costs to have that construction, to build that, will go towards public art organizations and funding public art projects. So whether it's Jasper or One Columbia versus them having to worry about a budget. No. Any public construction project, 1% of that budget will be allocated towards, you know, public art projects and public art organizations. And I'm calling a percent for public art. So those would be three things: housing endowment, a city kitchen that offers free breakfast, free lunch, and not no cheap mess, no cheap shit. Like, incredible food, because we have great food talent here. And also, we have to start funding the creatives and artists here, because that then will create more jobs. Create a sustainable Columbia, attract more people here. We have to just get in the habit of taking care of our own, and not in a selfish way, but that attracts people to your city and brings in tourism and bring in businesses and growth, because people see, oh, this place is affordable. Their city's taking care of them, and they're able to live happy and healthy without stressing. And then all the other things that we want, businesses, jobs, growth, all is going to come because we have taking care of the foundation, and the foundation of Columbia's people.
Well, thank you so very much. Once again, we have local candidate for city council at large, Jared Johnson. Also, he's a local activist, photographer, and co-owner of All Good Books. I would usually encourage a candidate to say, hey, donate to my campaign, go to my website. He ain't doing that. So so instead of that, you want to support him, catch him at All Good Books, buy a book.
Well, no, if you want to support me, yeah, you can come buy a book. But if you want to support specifically the campaign, first follow me on Instagram at I am Jared Lee Johnson. And if you like what you're hearing, because every minute I like what I'm about, mm-hmm. I'm aware that's okay. But if you are, talk to your friends about it. Share the post, because everything I post in regards to the campaign will be public. So that is the best way to help me. We love, support my business, yes, automatic. But just if you like what you hear, if you're on board with keeping Columbia affordable, share the information you see about the campaign and share the information you see about my platform ideas on social media, and share it with your friends and talk about it. Because together we can keep Columbia affordable.
Yeah, well, thank you once again. Appreciate the conversation. I'm looking forward to the Jared text. And also,
Oh my God, cut this out.
No, seriously, I'm being facetious. But I also think
serious.
But I also think the idea of trying to encourage people to figure out a way to get involved politically where it costs little to no money, I think that's an approach that could have some longer lasting effect. So I would kind of encourage you to kind of think more about that and put something like that together to be like, hey, I'm young, I'm involved in a city, I want to do some work. What can I do? I think that's really, really interesting. Once again, this is Pre-Shake Us to the Pre-Shake Us podcast. Make sure you get your tickets to the next Soul House Sessions, October the 22nd at Kolger Center for the Arts. It's going to be a ColaCon reunion show. We're going to have a panel discussion with hip hop artists, Jay Live, Dre Lopez, Stephen Prowse, and Ebony Toussaint from the Aurora podcast. We're also going to have an art exhibit sneak peek that's going to include Sanford Green and Dan Lish, one of the most amazing illustrators in the world from London. His work is going to be in the show. Thank you guys for listening. Y'all can buy tickets to that show by going to KolgerCenterForTheArts.com or go to all my Preach Jacobs pages. Just find me. Y'all listen to this podcast, all both of you. Y'all know how to find my tickets. Thank you guys once again. And until next time, peace.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by its host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2025, all rights reserved.